Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
We welcome you again to the Mormon Channel of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and our program, Past Impressions, where we study the history of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and we deal with the people, places, events, and some of the key issues of church history. I'm Brent Topp, the chair of the Department of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University, and with me today is our guest, Jill Mulvey-Durr, a very prominent historian and a senior historian in the church history department for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And Jill is one of our great experts on women's history and loves to tell us about the women of the church in the early days of the church. And I've known Jill for many years, and we're grateful to have you, Jill, on our program today.
Thank you, Brent.
We're talking about Nauvoo period, and Jill, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Latter-day Saint women of Nauvoo, and how do we hear their voices? What is it that helps us to understand the women's experience in Nauvoo?
Well, we have a number of different kinds of records. Probably the most plentiful in some ways are reminiscences. A lot of the documents that date to the Nauvoo era have long since disappeared. So we don't have as many contemporary or contemporaneous accounts as we have women remembering. But there was among the Latter-day Saints at an early era, long before we started talking about writing our personal histories and family histories, I think there was a consciousness of the importance of keeping records and especially recounting those early foundational events of Mormonism, wherever people's lives happen to intersect. So we have a lot of reminiscences. We have letters, some good letters. I'm particularly fond of letters. And we have some remarkable diaries, I think, that have survived. And of course, the letters and diaries have a great immediacy to them. Reminiscences focus on a lot of different things. Women, of course, remembered the physicality of the experience in Nauvoo, the sickness, especially in that swampy land, the lack of good housing, and they remembered the great spiritual experiences as well. I think a lot of memories of Joseph Smith, of the temple, and of the Relief Society, all important parts of women's lives in Nauvoo.
When we speak of reminiscences, you know, obviously the diaries and the letters would be 1839 to 46 we're dealing with. What are we talking about when you say reminiscences? When would most of those Nauvoo women's reminiscences have been written?
Oh, anywhere from the 1860s, I would think, but probably more in the 1870s. There was an effort in the 1870s to collect some life stories of women for the book Women of Mormondom that was published in 1877. I don't know exactly how many women, but I would think probably 30, 40 women wrote specifically for that, a lot of them recounting their conversion, their experiences in Kirtland and Missouri and Nauvoo.
Now, sometimes historians feel like that reminiscences are less reliable than having letters or diaries or, you know, primary documents at that time. But what do you think about that? Are they reliable? Do we find that they are very much corroborate the contemporary accounts that we have at that time? And what value do these reminiscences have for us today?
That's a good question. I think people misremember a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
They get dates wrong. Eliza was a pretty good historian, but she did miss some specific mm-hmm. dates we can show are wrong. When I say Eliza, I mean Eliza R. Snow. And I think things get conflated in people's memories. So we sometimes miss on accuracy that way. On the other hand, what we get from a reminiscence is sometimes perspective on an event. We see these women zero in on the temple, for example, and remember its significance mm-hmm. in a way that they might not have been able to put together right at the exact moment. Or, of course, the memories of Joseph Smith became so important. And sometimes it's the smallest things. You mm-hmm. ask when these reminiscences were written, and I said the 1870s. There was also a big thrust in the 1880s when Hubert Howe Bancroft was here working on his History of Utah. He tried to interview a lot of people or get their life sketches. Those would be people who were adults in Nauvoo, but we have reminiscences later from children. I think sometimes children have really very crystal clear memories mm-hmm. of a specific thing that makes for a very engaging piece in the puzzle.
Why don't you share with us some of your favorites or some of the things that you've learned from studying these documents of some of the great women of Nauvoo?
Okay. I would love to do that. I just have to say I've never found a reminiscence or a letter or a diary that I didn't like.
It's like, what's your favorite scripture? What's your favorite grandchild? That's wonderful.
Yeah. I've got a couple that I like because of the glimpses they give us of Joseph Smith. A personal sense of him and how he related to people. One is by Mary Isabella Horn, who was born in England and baptized in Canada. She met Joseph Smith when she was 19 during his mission to Canada, and he preached there in the barn her husband Joseph had built and stayed in her home then. In 1842, Joseph and Mary Isabella Horn were living in Quincy mm-hmm. when Joseph Smith came through there, and they stopped at the home of Joseph and Mary Isabella for refreshments. And she recalled that he was in the best of spirits. And he said laughingly, "Sister Horn, if I had a wife as small as you, when trouble came, I would put her in my pocket and run."
I love that. That's great.
Isn't that lovely? During this visit, this was the time when Joseph Smith was having a lot of lawsuits, those vexatious lawsuits mm-hmm. we hear about pressed against him. So he was actually on his way to visit Governor Carlin and thought after that visit he would return home to Nauvoo. But he instead, the next day, found himself back at the Horns. And she recalled, he said, "Oh, Sister Horn, the spirit always draws me to your home." And she said, "You are always welcome, but how is it you are here when I thought you were almost home?" And he explained that he had some legal matters that he would have to continue to settle. And I think it's interesting what she remembered. This tells us a lot about women's lives. She remembered washing his clothes for him.
Hmm.
He was wearing white linen pants. She didn't forget that. And she noted in her reminiscence that she esteemed it an honor to wash and iron the clothes of the prophet of the last days. At 5 o'clock on Sunday morning, he was ready to leave the house, having spent the intervening time fasting and praying. And before leaving the house, he blessed them all as he was bidding farewell.
It's a tender account. That's so, so beautiful.
Yeah, I think we get the sense of the sacredness for women, of the service of doing little everyday things. That, of course, was their lives. But when they sanctified it and made it holy when they dedicated it to serving the Lord or his prophet. Another little account, a couple. These are things that were recalled by women recalling their childhood, things that they did for the prophet. This is from Elizabeth Clements Kendall, who recalled that her mother also washed and ironed for the prophet Joseph Smith's family. And her Elizabeth and her brothers delivered the finished articles in a little wagon. Mm. And many times they took popcorn and apples with them to give members of the Smith family, which seemed to please the Smiths very much.
That's an interesting image that we usually don't think of when we think about church history, that taking the laundered clothes to Joseph in a wagon. So that's really cute. That's great.
And Eunice Billings Snow remembered that when the prophet was trying to escape these vexatious lawsuits and was in hiding, she said he would sometimes be allowed to visit his family and for an evening would request my father and mother to come to sing for him. They would take me with them, and when Joseph found that I could sing a part alone, he requested them to bring me, and we would sing his favorite hymns, "When Joseph His Brethren Beheld," "Redeemer of Israel," "The Spirit of God," and and others. And, of course, women remembered fondly their commitment to the temple. For members of the Jolly family, for example, the temple formed their primary experience in Nauvoo. Sarah Pippin Jolly's husband and sons answered the call to give all of their time to building the temple, the family surviving on little more than cornbread and water for long periods of time. And this is Sarah's recollection, again, helping us understand what people focused on later. "But it was good," she said. "I don't complain. I had the privilege of going through the temple with my husband, so I'm paid for all my trouble."
Mm. Yeah, that's beautiful.
Things they remember. And the letters, as I mentioned, have a little different feel to them, letters and diaries. Again, we get more of the everyday little things, the washing, the ironing, the food preparation, attempting to go to meetings, and depending on the person to whom the letter was written. I'm fond of Bathsheba Smith's letters to her husband, George A. I think we get a sense of what her life was like, trying to set up a home. They were relatively newly married. Trying to get everything just right. You see her writing to George A. in October of 1842, explaining what's happening in the garden. "I have got my corn and fodder secured, broom corn, sunflower seed, and beans likewise. Melissa and me did it. Gilbert, I expect, will dig my potatoes. Uncle George is going to Keokuk to live. Brother Wilfred Woodruff, I expect, my most sociable neighbor. The baby has been very sick. Marianne has the egg some since Joseph went away. Nancy's children has been sick. Thaddeus is now sick. Jeremiah is very low with the fever. Appleton Harmon intends to go tomorrow. Mother Johnson sends her best love to you."
Those are great insights into just everyday living in Nauvoo. You're listening to the Mormon Channel of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Our guest is Jill Durr, senior historian and researcher in the Church History Department of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We're talking about the Nauvoo experience from women's perspective. And Jill, as you've been talking to us and giving us some of the really touching and interesting accounts from the letters and reminiscences of women, why don't we continue and have you share with us some of the others of your favorites of that help us to understand better the women's experience and also the whole experience of the Nauvoo period?
I was just mentioning some early letters from Bathsheba Smith. Her husband, she wrote letters because her husband George A. was away on missions, a member of the Quorum of the Twelve. He was often gone, and this was not uncommon for women, their experience of being alone. A letter she wrote in July of 1843 tells how hard it was to part from him, these tender ties. "I wish I could have been with you and stayed until you started, for it seemed such a long time until the boat came. I thought perhaps you would come home again a few minutes, but I was disappointed. I wanted to see you very much. I would have gone to see you if I could. Oh, my dear, it is nothing to cry when one feels as I did when I saw the boat going. I was pleased to think you would not have to wait any longer. But then, how could I bear to have it carry you off so rapidly from me? I watched until I could not see it any longer. Then I held my head, for it ached."
That's so beautiful. We don't get text messages or emails with that kind of prose in this day and age.
No, I think we get a sense of how hard it was to have him away, mm-hmm. and what the letters coming to these women meant. In September of 43, she says, "We got the letter you sent to President Rigdon last Sunday, which we was much pleased to get. When I get a letter, first all the rest come to hear it. The brethren's wives have all been to see me this week." So we get a sense of women visiting together. What an important part of their lives that was. Now, Bathsheba's letters are to her husband, and they're concerned with the crops, the family, mm-hmm. who's meeting together, who's sick. A little different feel comes from Sally Carlisle Randall, who was writing to non-member family who were still back in New England, where she mm-hmm. was from. So we get the impressions of somebody who's coming into Nauvoo, what it's like to see this city. She wrote in October of 43 to her family, "As for Nauvoo, I cannot tell you much about it at present, for I have not seen much of it yet. But what I have seen, I think it has been recommended fully as highly as it deserves. It is very sickly here at present with fevers and fever and ague and measles, and a great many children die with them." Her mm-hmm. initial impression, the difficulties there. "I expect it is a hard place for poor people that have no money to get a living. There is so many poor that depend on their work for a living that they can hardly get enough to be comfortable." Mm-hmm. So we get a sense of the hardship mm-hmm. in this city for men and for women mm-hmm. who are looking for work. She talked about the sickness. She has a son, George, who ends up getting sick and dying. And she writes to tell the family about that just a month after this first letter, saying, "George has gone to try the realities of eternity." Mm. But then one of the most interesting things about her letters, and probably some of our listeners are familiar with them, is that she hears this doctrine of baptism for the dead. Mm-hmm. And it is thrilling to her that her husband can be baptized for her son mm-hmm. who has died before he could be baptized. And she writes the family in April of 44, "I want you should write me the given names of all our connections that are dead as far back as grandfathers and grandmothers at any rate. I intend to do what I can to save my friends, and I should be very glad if some of you would come and help me, for it is a great work for one to do alone. It is Father's privilege to save his friends if he will come into the church. If not, some mm-hmm. other one must do it."
Yeah, isn't that interesting that we get a perspective of a major doctrine that is revealed in Nauvoo, and we get it from a very personal standpoint, not just a theological analysis, but how does this apply to my little children that we've lost? That's so beautiful. So
that's it. It is really sweet. These are wonderful letters that span really 4 or 5 years in Nauvoo. She tells us in June. Writing, they're just this family is just about to head west, and she tells her family, the temple is finished and dedicated to the Lord. It is a most splendid building. We received our endowments last winter with the rest of those saints, and I am very glad that I am worthy to have a name with the saints of God and enjoy the privileges that I now do. And I would rejoice if my friends, meaning my family, mm-hmm. would receive the gospel and go with me.
Oh, that's very beautiful.
I think trying to share that experience, and both Bathsheba and Sally Randall are also sharing the tensions that are starting to foment in Nauvoo. Both talk in their letters about the dissenters, and most mm-hmm. and both ultimately talk about the martyrdom. One of my the accounts of the martyrdom I find most touching is not in a letter, but in a diary. And so maybe we could turn to diaries for a moment.
Okay. Why don't we talk about diaries and have you share with us some of your favorite things that we learned from the diaries. How are the diaries different? What do they focus on? And why are they so valuable to us today as historians and as members of the church?
I think diaries have a great intimacy to them. They give us a way to be part of someone's daily life. Sometimes the details kept in diaries are not don't seem to us highly significant.
Right.
Went to meeting. Mm-hmm. It rained today. Washed today. Mm-hmm. So and so is sick or had the headache. And often, sometimes we don't we long for things that are not noted in a mm-hmm. diary. And that can be very frustrating for a historian or mm-hmm. or a family member who is surprised that Aunt Mary didn't note this significant event mm-hmm. in church history. The date passes and it's not noted there. Whereas Aunt Mary might remember that later in a mm-hmm. reminiscence or might write about it in a letter. But there is something in that dailiness to diaries that gives them great value. We sometimes get a sentiment just as it's expressed. Sometimes diaries are enigmatic. Mm-hmm. We have people coming and going that we can't identify, or a cryptic entry about a day long to be remembered without
remembering
without the details. But still, I think we do have some fine Nauvoo diaries, and I wanted to share part of one of them. That I have read, and that is Zina Diantha Huntington Jacobs Young mm-hmm. diary. Zina's diary was published some time ago in BYU Studies, as I recall the whole thing. But it's particularly poignant because we get both the martyrdom and the days after the martyrdom. She's a young woman at this time. Her writing about the martyrdom has, I think, particular significance because as a young woman, she became a plural wife of Joseph Smith. So she's writing both from the perspective of a devoted member mm-hmm. and the perspective of someone who was sealed to him and felt that particular tie and connection. Mm-hmm. So let me just share a little bit of this. It's not the full account. Zina Diantha Huntington Jacob Smith Young.
A lot of names.
A lot of names, and a great woman to go mm-hmm. with it. Oh, the ever to be remembered awful day of the 27th of June, 1844. And then she talks about learning about this murder. Thus, in one day, about 3 or 4 o'clock, fell the prophet and patriarch of the Church of the Latter-day Saints, the kind husbands, the affectionate father, the venerable statesman, the friends of mankind, by the hand of ruthless mob mixed with dissenters.
Mm. Wow. What a window on that event. We read about it in historical prose, but to hear it from a deeply personal, poignant way like that is very, very touching.
Then we get the next 3 days. The 28th, this afternoon, the bodies of the martyrs arrive in town, went into Joseph's house for the first time, and there saw the lifeless, speechless bodies of the two martyrs for the testimony which they held. Little did my heart ever think that mine eyes should witness this awful scene. Hmm. On the 30th of June, it is Sunday, a lonely, heart-sorrowful day. It also rains. And then on July 1st, 1844, I washed Joseph and Hiram's clothes.
Mm, what an insight. Wow. What a touching sentence. Wow.
To say I was the one mm-hmm. Who did this and what emotion mm. must have been part of it. And I think there are intimate parts of all lives. You know, making a coffin mm-hmm. would be
a man's labor.
A man's labor. Mm-hmm. Here we see a woman washing the clothes. That yeah. they might be dressed.
Wow. Well, Jill, you have studied for years and years. What would you say in just a nutshell? What has studying the voices of the women of the history of the church done for you personally?
Brent, I think it's impacted my life tremendously for the last 40 years. For one thing, I think when you're standing as an outsider and looking at a life, you see the dignity and worth of every life. And it's given me a great sense of the individual worth of every human being, which has made me feel differently about myself and my children, given me perspective sometimes when things are hard. I think you see that every life, every contribution is a value, even if it's carrying apples and popcorn mm-hmm. with the pressed clothes in a little wagon to a neighbor, no matter who that neighbor is, to mm-hmm. see the joy that it brings them. It's these small things that get mixed in with the big things, like the concept of baptism for the dead and having mm-hmm. our children in the eternities, that is Mormonism. It's the beauty of this worldview that brings heaven and earth together. And I think you see that in women's lives, and they leave records of it in ways that touch us right down to the present.
Thank you so much for being our guest today on Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Brent Topp, your host, and invite you to join us in future episodes as we study the people, places, events, and key issues associated with the history of the Restoration.